Growing up, I learned about this place I call my country. I learned about the revolution, how we got this liberty, how we won the right to protest, to assemble as we like, to set up in a public place and speak into the mic. And nowhere in the document does it say that you need a license in order to play. The Constitution is my permit. It's right there in black and white. You can read it in the First Amendment, in the U.S. Bill of Rights. Say that to a cop, they might arrest you. Enforcing that ordinance is what they do. Like in 1914, the Wobblies then were beaten and arrested again and again. Just for standing on a soapbox and keeping it real, they got to find out how a billy club feels. The Constitution is my permit. It's right there in black and white. You can read it in the First Amendment, in the U.S. Bill of Rights. Now from New York to Chicago, 2024, right there by the lake shore. Permits to protest systematically denied, rejected as soon as people applied. Coming up with excuses as the powers that be always seem to do here in the land of the free. The Constitution is my permit. It's right there in black and white. You can read it in the First Amendment, in the U.S. Bill of Rights. The Constitution is my permit. It's right there in black and white. You can read it in the First Amendment, in the U.S. Bill of Rights. You can read it in the First Amendment, in the U.S. Bill of Rights.
This is David Rovix and Kamala Emanuel, otherwise known as the Ministry of Culture. We are here in the studios of WZRD doing some songs for you. And let's see, we'll cue up another song here in our externalized brain, otherwise known as a tablet. And we'll do a song for all the students returning to their campuses and starting up the new round of encampments in solidarity with the Palestinians. It's happening now, like it has before, at the universities in a time of war. Put people together, they'll communicate, talk about things like college and state, talk about the research that built the Iron Dome, talk about their relatives starving back at home, talk about tuition and where the money's spent and where all the buildings in Gaza went. Wake up each morning and the headlines say how many hundreds of Palestinians died today, how many thousands were killed in the past week. People get together, people speak. The newscasters say with surety the campuses lack security. Meanwhile, across the ocean wide, Palestinian genocide. People are saying they won't leave till they win, and then the police are sent in, beaten and arrested, staff and students, and to try to silence this growing movement, they're punishing people for making it known that the direct connection can be easily shown. How the investments of this institution are funding another final solution. Where it goes is anyone's guess. After all, this is the U.S. Battles have been lost and won, but with bombs being dropped every day by the ton, with the orphaned and famished beneath the sky, waiting for the moment when it's their turn to die. Some people just can't look away. They have to set up a tent on the campus and say, boycott, sanction, and divest. 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 And we'll do another song next. And it will be about things that happened a long time ago, but which are very relevant to the present day in the capitalist world in particular, in this country in particular. It's about the Highland Clearances in Scotland that brought this country a significant amount of its population in the form of Scottish refugees. Once upon a century, people lived above this glen. There were 50 houses here with parents and their children, but someone said they owned what those four generations had called their homes across the Scottish nation. Allotments kept on shrinking while the rent would only rise. One by one the broken crofters left the open skies, the frozen shores of Nova Scotia in a far-off colony, or somewhere else across the sea. Once upon a century, from the ways of old, from something like the golden rule to the rule of gold, it's just the logic of the market. Supply and demand says to drive the people from the land. Instead of eerie silence reverberating all around, among the gardeners and shepherds, you would hear the sound of the pipes and drums and choirs, of the songs that would be sung, and the stories that were told in the Gaelic tongue. Once upon a century, you'd never think it could to turn into a field what had been a neighborhood. Once there were the promises of loyalty or clan, and then there was just profit if you can. If we travel back to a different time and space, it was possible for most to afford to live someplace. But it's the logic of the market, each investor's conviction, more money is just grounds for an eviction. Once upon a century, they cleared the highlands for the sheep. Most folks did not resist as the rent became too steep. They packed their things and moved, scattered far and near. You'd never know that they once were here. Just for the whims of capital, the biggest profits for the banks, you fight a war for empire and clearance is your thanks. From the crops of Scotland to the sidewalks of LA, if anything has changed, who can say? Once upon a century, people lived above this glen. There were 50 houses here with parents and their children. I was, since the horrendous events of October in Gaza and southern Israel began to unfold, I was thinking about Well, a lot of things, but one of the things I was thinking about was history and the events that have taken place in this country that have borne so much similarity to the events taking place currently ongoing for the past 10 months in Gaza. And one of those historical events that unfortunately very few of us ever end up knowing anything about was the event that involved in partway through it involved the biggest mass hanging in a single day in U.S. history in the state of Minnesota in 1862 during the uprising and famine and deportations of that year. He heard that they were on their way. When the settlers came, Little Crow knew that nothing now would ever be the same. The treaties he agreed to, signed under duress, he watched as the land of the Indians was less and less and less. His people were left with a patch only 20 miles wide, a little bit of land by the Mississippi Riverside, a little bit of land with a very uncertain fate once this place called Minnesota became a state. Little Crow went all the way to Washington, D.C., where he appealed his people's case to the highest authority. Then they took away half the land allotted for his kin, and then even that little patch saw more settlers moving in. Little Crow watched them hunting and logging all the trees. He watched his people growing hungry. He watched the children freeze when their meager crops failed. He went in search of aid from the Indian agents who had grown rich from the money that they'd made. What should have fed the people lined their pockets instead. Lincoln sent an investigator, and that's just what he said. The standard was corruption, treaties made to be broken, along with comforting words duplicitously spoken. Little Crow told his people words bitter on his tongue. The agent had said his people could eat grass and their own dung. Peaceful coexistence could clearly last no more. He gathered up an army and set out to go to war. His warriors raided the stores of food that should have been theirs. They took guns and ammunition, put soldiers in their crosshairs. They won one battle after another, drove all the settlers out until divisions heading south were given a new route. Little Crow's uprising was finally suppressed, and the Indians of Minnesota were sent far off to the west. Whether part of the uprising to the authorities, it didn't matter, and they died of famine and disease. Little Crow was killed picking berries with his son, shot down by a settler out hunting with his shotgun. For handing in his scalp, the hunter made a dandy sum, and his bones were displayed in a museum. Little Crow was a leader, and it seems to me he made decisions when every option was impossibility. He had the choice to starve and die on what was left of the land, but he decided it was time to make a stand. He heard that they were on their way, and when the settlers came, Little Crow knew that nothing now would ever be the same. Let's do, here in Chicago, of all places, Chicago was the home of the Union of the Unemployed, or one of the main bases for the Union of the Unemployed back in the 1930s. And Chicago, the Union of the Unemployed in Chicago, led the way in this country in eviction defense and eviction response squads. And like when people would be evicted from their homes for inability to pay the rent, the Union of the Unemployed would gather in their thousands and carry the people's stuff back into their apartments. And the Union of the Unemployed had locksmiths that would change the locks back again and move people back in. And this kept on happening to such a degree in this city that in 1934, Chicago banned evictions. And this was one of many states, all the states in this country that had good rent control laws a long time ago, and now it's one of the 48 states that no longer has good rent control laws on a statewide basis. Many states, most states, I believe it is banned for any municipality to have any kind of rent control laws, such as in the state I live in Oregon. And I wrote this song for all those people living in their cars and all those renters, like my own family, whose rent has tripled in the past 17 years. And I know that's happening to folks in Chicago as well. Got the same corporations to blame for it, both cities. Each year there are more people living on the streets, their ranks growing geometrically. And in fact, the numbers are increasing by the exact same degree as the rents are rising. The situation is clear. If we don't change this reality, this ain't no civilization here. But what if all the renters stopped paying the rent and showed our collective might? What if we kept on refusing until housing was a human right? Each year, things get grimmer. Feels more like the sting of defeat. More and more people working two or three jobs who still can't make ends meet. What if we all said to our neighbors, here's what we will do. If the authorities come to evict anyone, we'll all come stand with you. What if all the renters stopped paying the rent and showed our collective might? What if we kept on refusing until housing was a human right? Each year is more dystopic, beyond what anyone can stand. But there was a time in this country when evictions were banned, when the Union of the Unemployed organized, and then they passed rent control 90 years ago. We can make them do it again. What if all the renters stopped paying the rent and showed our collective might? What if we kept on refusing until housing was a human right? What if all the renters stopped paying the rent and showed our collective might? What if we kept on refusing until housing was a human right? Housing was a human right. Housing was a human right.
And for some reason, this is not an initiative that I've heard coming out of the DNC.
Yeah, they're not talking about rent control in the DNC.
Mm-mm.
They're talking about building more. Yeah, never talk about banning evictions. Only about building more housing. And let's see, we have a sign, and I need better
glasses.
Oh,
we should introduce ourselves again.
Yeah.
Well, I'm Kamala Emanuel. I've come from Maganjin, Brisbane, Australia. And
I'm David Rovics from Portland, Oregon, and together we are the Ministry of Culture, and we're here visiting Chicago during this auspicious week of activities, because it's young people who listen to this song.
I don't drive a car because they run on gas, but if I did, it'd run on biomass.
I ride a bike,
or sometimes a skateboard. So piss off all you drivers and your yuppie hordes. Sitting all day in the traffic queues, I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't eat meat, I just live on moldy chives, or the donuts that I found in last week's dumpster dives. Look at you people in that restaurant, I think you are so sad, when you could have been eating bagels like the ones that I just had. I think it is a shame all the bird swat things you do. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't wear leather, and I like my clothes in black. And I made a really cool hammock from a moldy coffee sack. I like to hop on freight trains. I think that is so cool. It's so much funner doing this than being stuck in school. I can't believe you're wearing those brand new shiny shoes. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't have sex, and there will be no sequel, because heterosexual relationships are inherently unequal. I'll just keep on moshing to anti-flag and crass until there are no differences in gender, race, or class. All you brainwashed breeders, you just haven't got a clue. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't believe in leaders, I think consensus is the key. I don't believe in stupid notions like representative democracy. Whether or not it works, I know it is the case that only direct action can save the human race. So when I see you in your voting booth, then I know it's true. I'm a better anarchist than you. I am not a pacifist, I like throwing bricks. And when the cops have caught me and I've taken a few licks, I always feel lucky if I get a bloody nose, because I feel so militant and everybody knows. By the time the riot is all through, I'm a better anarchist than you. I'm a better anarchist than you.
Maybe if a song could raise an army. I think is our time here kind of wrapping up here.
Should we? No, you
can go. We'll just keep on going then. What else? Let's see. Oh yeah, we'd love to. We'd love to. Oh, let's do that. Oh, good, excellent. Well, we will do a song about actually a friend of mine, who was back in the '60s and. When other people were marching against the war and doing all sorts of other things to try to impact the horrors that were unfolding in Vietnam. My friend Al and his friend Clyde decided to join the Merchant Marine and lead a mutiny. Around, I'll tell a story about a man I know. What he did across the ocean half a century ago. Death was raining from the skies all over Vietnam. Al and Clyde decided they had to try to stop the bombs. These two young men signed up to join the Merchant Marine, horrified by what they heard along with what they'd seen. They began to have discussions, they found a common goal. They joined the crew of the Columbia Eagle, and then they'd take control. The ship was full of napalm, heading across the sea to be loaded on the planes and be dropped upon the country to burn the skin off people beneath it at the time. They vowed to break the law to prevent a greater crime. They thought they'd spend their lives in prison, or more likely they would die. But Clyde and Al agreed, at least they had to try. To sail to Cambodia, with all the napalm as well, where it might remain forever, the bombs that never fell. They carried out their plan, and they didn't slip, just two guns between them, but soon they ran the ship. They brought it to neutral waters by Sihanoukville, that these bombs might never be sent to maim and kill. But that's not how it ended.
The next thing that they knew, Sihanouk was overthrown, there was a military coup. Clyde McKay died in the jungle with so many of his peers. In a California prison, Al Gladkowski spent 8 years. The ship was not off course by much more than a bit. The future of the Folly, perhaps they didn't change it. But while the blood was flowing, and most people spent their days maybe marching in the streets or just joining the rat race, there are those among us who can say they really tried, who did everything they possibly could to stop the fratricide. If you see a big white beard on the central eastern shore, he might be a mutineer who tried to stop the war. Gather round, I'll tell a story about a man I know, what he did across the ocean half a century ago. Let's see here. What else? What do you think? Oh, that's a good idea. Let's see. This is what they should be saying inside the DNC meetings, but they're not. Except for the people who are getting kicked out of the meetings. Let's see, we have a note.
Talk about Palestine.
Good idea.
We've got a lot
to say about that's
Palestine.
What we're just about to do. That's good. We were just coming around to that. That's good. We love that request to talk about Palestine. Usually it's like, don't talk about Palestine. You know, that's. This is about Palestine. This is genocide. It is not a war. It is a slaughter in a ghetto by the shore. A ghetto with no army, a ghetto with no ports, a ghetto under the jurisdiction of the military courts. Puppet occupying power with a target everyone, killing them with bombs and chemicals and guns. This is genocide. They're using famine and disease as our lives go on. Just across the seas, the occupying army is imposing starvation on everyone in Gaza, of every station, parents or children, people anywhere. They're being killed because they're still living there. This is genocide. It's happening now. The Western politicians talk about how they must stop the bombing and let in aid. But the murder continues with American-made missiles and jets with zero regard as the buildings collapse like houses of cards. This is genocide, whether or not the media moguls have decided they've got elections to cover or any number of things more worthy than what is happening in Gaza, where they're facing 2 million dead. That's what the heads of the UN departments all said. This is genocide, and if you disagree, there is a phrase to describe your idiocy. Those who see and then look away, those leaders who talk, but at the end of the day, the hunger, the bombs falling down from the sky, is a Holocaust that they would rather deny. This is genocide. And a few months ago, a young soldier in the U.S. military named Aaron Bushnell went up to the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. with some flammable liquid and a cell phone.
25th of February, 2024, in protest against a U.S.-sponsored genocidal war. As bombs were falling and exploding all around, burning up the bodies of the children on the ground, huddling in tents and just waiting to die, this young man could no longer stand to hear the cries. On International Drive in Washington, D.C., a young airman walked up to the Israeli embassy as mothers buried babies who had no milk within, as white phosphorus munitions burned off people's skin, as the troops were firing on those trying to find bread, as the body count was building up to 30,000 dead. Dressed in his fatigues, there on Embassy Row, he announced into the camera this was where he'd meant to go. An act of desperation, and one designed to share the horrors of the crimes being committed over there. Like a mirror to the world, so no one could look away from what's happening in Gaza every minute of each day. He stood in front of the building, as ready as he'd get. He put his phone down so he could live stream it on the net. When he lit the fire, on the day he chose to die, with no way to stop the slaughter, at least he had to try. As the flames rose up, yellow, red, and blue, did he look up at the cross and wonder what would Jesus do? The Secret Service came to point a gun at Aaron's face. The airman didn't move. He just stood in place. He'd come to make a spectacle. That was understood. If he couldn't stop the war, he'd do what he could. As his body burned before us in an unmistakable sign, again and again he shouted out, "Free Palestine!" On the 25th of February, 2024,
and you can be sure that someone out there thinks that you're an anti-Semite if you want to talk about that.
Good, we'll do a... what's that third one? Oh, hi. Who's that? Hi.
Hijacking the ship.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we did that one, though. We did that one. But those are great ideas. But we'll do St. Patrick, and we'll do... two of them. Yep, we got it.
We got a surprise afterwards.
Oh, cool. Let's do that.
Great, David.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We'll do a little song about U.S. history, particularly the history of the southwestern U.S., but the whole country, and Mexican history, and Irish history.
All rolled up in one.
Oh, yeah. My name is John Riley. I'll have your ear only a while. I left my dear home in Ireland. It was death, starvation, or exile. When I got to America, it was my duty to go enter the army and slog across Texas to join in the war against Mexico. And it was there in the pueblos and hillsides that I saw the mistake I had made. Part of a conquering army with the morals of a bayonet blade. So in the midst of these poor dying Catholics, screaming children, the burning stench of it all, myself and 200 Irishmen decided to rise to the call. From Dublin City to San Diego,
Diego. We witnessed freedom denied, so we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We marched neath the green flag of St. Patrick, emblazoned with Erin Gobra, bright with the harp and the shamrock, and Libertad para Republica. Just 50 years after Wolf Tone, 5,000 miles away, the Yanks called us a legion of strangers, and they can talk as they may. But from Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. Fought them in 5 major battles. Churubusco was the last. Overwhelmed by the cannons from Boston, we fell after each mortar blast. Most of us died on that hillside in the service of the Mexican state. So far from our occupied homeland, we were heroes and victims of fate. From Dublin City to San Diego, witness freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side.
We will close with a song called If a Song Could Raise an Army. All these, I've done three albums since October. And, yeah. Oh, yeah. And we are on WZRD, Chicago. And if you know anybody in Madison or Viroqua, we're going there this weekend. And this is a song from one of the three albums that's mostly been about Gaza that we've done since October.
If they saw, bring us together across the planet that gave us birth, to act as one, bring peace and justice all around this shattered earth. If a song could take down borders, take down fences, make them fall, liberate all those imprisoned, kept behind the ghetto walls. If a song could stop the bombs, so the next might be the last. If a song could change the future, so it won't be like the past. If a song could be a missile fired from the Iron Dome, if it could protect the children, keep them safe within their homes. If a song could raise an army and transport it on command, take us all to Palestine to defend the Holy Land. If a song could be concrete and put to use to rebuild if it might. Turn back the clock, bring back all the babies killed. If a song could be a blueprint, instructions to show us how. If a song could change the world, then let us sing it now. If a song could bring us together across the planet that gave us birth, to act as one, bring peace and justice all around this shattered earth.
Thank you very much for listening, Chicago. This has been a presentation of David Rovics and Kamala Emanuel, also known as the Ministry of Culture. You can hear more at davidrovics.com or looking me up on Spotify or wherever else. Thank you very much.